Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the month of October has been dubbed Striketober. And like I said last week, I'm hoping that this translates into never again November, something else for December, and this kind of energy and militancy continues into the coming months. Because, look, we desperately need it. We need the kind of activism we've been seeing. In fact, so many strikes right now. And the number that I saw last week, there are more than 100,000 people who are either on strike or have authorized going on strike right now, which in my lifetime, I think that's probably the most I've seen in my lifetime, which, again, a good thing. In fact, this is so big that the AFL-CIO has dedicated a webpage to this. It's their big strike map. You can go across the country on this map and find in your backyard where there are strikes going on and where you can help participate. And it's aflcio.org/strike-map. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. But here to share some thoughts on this wave of strikes going on and maybe some details of the big ones, I've asked Dave Jamieson to come talk with us. Dave is, in my view, the best labor reporter in the country. He's a labor reporter over at Huffington Post. Dave, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, thanks for having me. Thanks for the kind words.
So, you know, I'm looking at this strike map that the AFL-CIO has put out, and this is a pretty interesting moment. All this activity, and in such a short period of time, I'd like to get your thoughts.
Yeah, something's definitely happening here. You know, with the caveat that the big numbers are strike authorizations, right? That doesn't necessarily mean everyone's going out on strike. But, you know, say if there were a strike in Hollywood to come to pass, that's 60,000 workers right there. That would be the biggest private sector strike in 14 years. You've got over 30,000 who've authorized a strike at Kaiser, healthcare workers, and of course the 10,000 at John Deere. So the possibility of all these workers being on strike at once those are big numbers when you compare to recent history. You know, over the past decade, a typical year in big work stoppages, we might see 150,000 out on strike, you know, in a given year on average. And I think that teacher strikes of 2018 and 2019, you know, have inflated that a bit. So if we had over 100,000 private sector workers on strike at once, that would be a really big deal. But of course, we got to put this in kind of the broader perspective of, you know, the long lens of history here. You go back to post-World War II years, we used to have 1 or 2 million workers out on strike in a typical year. So these, in the grand sweep of history, these are not big numbers. And that's a function of union density being way down. You know, you generally don't go out on strike if you don't have a union. It requires a strike fund, organization, everything that unions do. So in the grand sweep of things, these are low numbers, as we've seen for years, but kind of in more recent history, you know, something's popping here. And I think a lot of it has to do with the leverage workers are seeing. You know, there's kind of a weirdly tight labor market in a lot of places. There were very few strikes last year during the pandemic. A lot of, you know, bargaining was put off because of the pandemic. And I think now, you know, workers are coming out of that and then they're flexing their muscles a bit.
Yeah. And also, you know, the thing that I keep hearing overwhelmingly from the people who have been going on strike, you know, all during the pandemic, we were called heroes and essential and patted on the back and say how wonderful we were. And now we're being treated like garbage. And, you know, they kind of got used to being respected. They kind of got used to having a little dignity. And now they're demanding that their pay, their compensation, and their working conditions meet that. And I think this is a great moment. But to your point about, you know, just what we're seeing in the small number of folks who have unions, I think the other side of this is happening as well with the great resignation. As you're seeing all these people just going, I don't have the right to strike, but I have the right to leave. And I think that's the reason you're not seeing people coming back to some industries, especially in the low-wage service sector.
Absolutely. I think you're totally right. You know, what we're seeing in the non-union world of high rates of quits, high rates of people staying out of the workforce, millions of people, because for one reason or another, they don't like what employers are offering. So I've called it kind of a silent strike, you know, where this is not workers going out on a picket line, walking off the job. This is workers just saying, you know what, I don't like what you're offering, so I'm not going to work. And I think for the non-union workers doing that. I think it's you know, for a lot of the same reasons as the union workers, you know, at John Deere and elsewhere, who have gone out on strike, is they don't like what the employer is offering, so they're holding out for something better.
Yeah, and this to me is one of these moments, Dave, where you go, it's apparent we need major comprehensive labor law reform, because you have so many people quitting instead of saying, no, we're going to stand and we're going to fight and we're going to make things better. Because look, I grew up in a generation where, you know, if something was wrong in the workplace, we believed that we could change it. We believed we could organize. Look, I'm a lot older than what's going on now. But I remember a time where we thought, you know, at least we'd have a fair shot at organizing. I think right now, I think the majority of workers in this country know that the chances of organizing and winning an election and getting a contract are so much more difficult than they were in years past, which is why, one, I think we need the labor law reform. But two, do you think this is a possibility of a moment where employers finally wake up and go, well, maybe you should make it a little bit easier because we can't get anybody to come into these crummy jobs?
Yeah, you know, I think an interesting thing, you know, is going on here, where we have this tight labor market that is giving workers leverage. But as I keep telling people, I think a lot of people in unions and a lot of people on the left are excited about what's going on right now. But this could be really fleeting, you know, at the end of the day, if this is really just a function of what's going on in the job market. You know, that could be a temporary shift of leverage towards workers and not something systemic, you know. This isn't necessarily what we're seeing, something that is going to put more workers into unions and give them the ability to wield the strike weapon, right? I think, you know, you'd be looking for some more systemic change with something like the PRO Act or pieces of the PRO Act that end up going into law that make it easier to join unions, make it a lot easier to win first contracts. You know, that's the kind of potentially permanent shift in power we might see. You know, short of that, you know, maybe this labor market changes and a lot of that leverage evaporates. And you know, in 5 years, we're looking at a, you know, a total reversal of the tables here. You know, we just don't know.
No, and that's the sad thing, because I keep telling people, like, I have some friends who are bus drivers, and they say, well, you know, they're throwing better wages, everything's great right now. I go, this is the reason you need a union right now, to make sure you get that in writing, because just what you're saying, in a year, two, three, five, when things go back to the way it used to be or what was normal then, they just claw all that stuff back and you're no better off. So right now is that time. We're with Dave Jamieson. Dave is a labor reporter over at Huffington Post. You can check out the work that he does over at HuffingtonPost.com. Dave, let's talk about some of the work that you've been doing around the John Deere strike, around what's going on with IATSE and this tentative agreement. Let's start with John Deere. 10,000 workers out on strike. Tell me what's going on.
So the Deere strike is a really fascinating story for a couple reasons. One being that this isn't just a repudiation of John Deere. It's frankly a repudiation to the United Auto Workers, who bargained a tentative agreement. They took it to membership. They thought it was a satisfactory deal. The Deere workers voted it down overwhelmingly. 90% said no, go back to the table. And that's how we ended up, you know, having this very large strike. And, you know, having talked to workers, they feel like they've really got the short end of the stick on the last few contracts. A big piece of why this rejected was they have a two-tier system at John Deere. You know, this was created in 1997, where new hires thereafter would be getting you know, lesser pay and benefits. They've closed the gap on the pay. The lower benefits are still there. The workers want to eliminate that. Deere wanted not only to keep that system in place, but to essentially expand it, create a third tier for new hires who wouldn't get any defined benefit pension at all. So, you know, the workers I talked to said, we're tired of this kind of them dividing us. You know, we want equal pay for equal work. We don't want to be, you know, siloed into these different classes that resent each other, right? And the workers now know if we sell out the workers who come after us, they're not, why would they look out for us, you know, when the time comes and contract talks? And so this is like the two-tier thing. We've been seeing this for years, Rick. You know it, you know, really well. I think it's coming to a head now. We see it at Kellogg's too. The fight there is largely about a two-tier system. Kaiser, same thing. Strike authorization in large part because of a two-tier proposal. I think workers are tired of the divisions, and a lot of them are recognizing that it essentially threatens the union itself over the long term by the way that it sows division. What's going on there is interesting, because the members have told, both Deere and the UAW, we're tired of the system. We're taking control here and we want to change it.
No, and look, this is, unions are our workplace democracy, and this is what an active membership is all about. Something that I talk about all the time, which what I think it's important. If you're a member, be an active member, be engaged. When things come this way, vote it down. But here's the thing. I remember those two-tier systems coming out back in the 90s, and people on the job going, screw the unborn. We're gonna get what we get now. And I remember back then saying, you're creating a division within your union, and this is going to rip you apart. And we're right where I think virtually most, I think every working person was like, this is a bad idea. Because I talked to a guy from Kellogg, and he said that it's such a big gap between what one group makes and the other. It's like $12 an hour.
It is.
And they can't keep people coming in. Their turnover rate is incredibly high. So what ends up happening is you can't keep people. So the legacy, the people who have been there a while, end up getting abused with massive forced overtime and all kinds of things. And this is where we are, which is why you would think that the company would go, hey, maybe we do need to close that system.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the folks at Kellogg's, and we've heard of that, we heard it at Nabisco too. Workers saying that their companies are having a hard time retaining people. And we hear it at John Deere too. I was talking to someone at the Waterloo plant who said that, he feels like they're only hanging on to half of the new hires that they've brought on recently. Because those folks are getting lesser benefits than people used to. And on top of that, you got kind of a tighter labor market where employers don't necessarily have the pick of the litter. They say at Deere, they used to be able to just, interview 100 people and pick whoever they wanted. That is not how it is right now. And so, that at Deere combined with the high ag commodity prices, Deere is extremely profitable. It's a great time to be selling farm equipment. The workers sense that as a couple told me, like, it's now or never.
Yeah.
Like, these are the best conditions we're going to get to go on strike. So let's do it now.
Yeah, no, so where do you see this going in the coming days? I mean, like you said, now is the time Deere should be selling all of the tractors they can. I can't imagine that they're overly happy having their workforce out. This is the time for them to negotiate and end this quickly, because ultimately this is about John Deere ending this strike.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I never like place bets on when a strike is going to end, because I feel like I'm always wrong.
Yeah.
Deere put out a statement yesterday, the day before, saying they feel like progress has been made in talks. And this is, obviously going to be really painful for them, however long it drags out. And if you're a worker, getting $250 a week or whatever, from the strike fund, it does not compare with what you normally get. So I think everyone wants to wrap this up. But the workers I've talked to are thinking this could go on a long time. Yeah. I mean, I talked to one guy who refinanced on his car loan, and is just ready to dig in and is convinced that Deere is going to come back with essentially the same proposal. So, people there are ready for a fight. And like a lot of strikes, you talk to people who say, I wanted to go on strike 5 years ago. This is something that people have been kind of mentally preparing for a long time. And so I think a lot of people are ready to hold the line for as long as they think they need to.
Yeah, and hopefully they financially prepared. As an old timer told me, day one in a union job, he said, before you get used to spending all the money you're going to make, put 6 months of your bills in a coffee can and forget you have it. Because you may have to walk across that on that picket line, and you better not be hungry. Because it could go 6 months, it could go longer. So you got to be prepared to fight and defend what we've got here. And he was not wrong. Let's move over to the IATSE tentative agreement. Because initially I looked at it and I'm going, there's some things I'm not thrilled with, but they got something better than what they were offered. We're now hearing some grumblings from the membership that, no, they're not really interested in this at all. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, it's this is with the caveat that there are no polls on this sort of thing. I don't pretend to know how this ratification vote will go. I have talked to people who have pretty serious concerns about it. you know, people wanted strong turnarounds, right? This is an industry term for the amount of time you're guaranteed between your shift ending and when you have to be back the next day. You know, the union in the tentative agreement got guaranteed 10-hour turnarounds. A lot of members already have that. They wanted something stronger, you know, on the order of 12 hours. And there's also this issue of residuals from streaming content, right? Streaming is blown up. It's the huge part of where the studios make their money. You know, there's traditionally been lower pay and residuals on that stuff. The proposal does pull the wages up, but you know, people are concerned that the residual piece is not being addressed satisfactorily to keep the health and pension funds in good shape. So the residuals are a big piece of this too. And then you had this horrific you know, tragedy where the cinematographer got shot and killed on set the other day in that Alec Baldwin film. And for a lot of people, I think that sort of brings home the safety and workplace, you know, and working conditions aspect that they've been talking about here. It's been reported that some of those workers walked off the set that morning before this happened, over their pay being held up and them, you know, having safety concerns. So there's a lot of variables and a lot of wild cards here. And it's amazing to see so many people really in tune with the process. I mean, I've talked with a lot of workers who are never kind of this closely attuned to what their union was doing. So I think there's, like, again, a big kind of democratic moment here of people being, you know, really engaged, and that over the long term is going to be a good thing. We'll see if this is bumpy, you know, and what happens with this tentative contract. Maybe it gets, you know, approved on strong numbers. Maybe it gets voted down and they send the union back to the table, and then things could get kind of hairy. So we don't know how this is going to go, but this is, like, very far from over.
Yeah, I mean, because like I said, I saw the tentative agreement and I'm like, yeah, they won some things. I would have, in this moment, you know, being the historic nature of the vote to authorize a strike, and the sheer number of people participated, I thought that maybe they got a little bit better, but we'll see. We'll see how this vote plays out. Dave, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the great work there at Huffington Post, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Always great talking to you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, our good friend Dave Jamieson. Make sure you check out his work over at Huffington Post, huffingtonpost.com, the website. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.